from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri Democrats will choose their gubernatorial nominee in just a few days. And the primary is basically between two Springfieldians, House Minority Leader Krista Quaid and businessman Mike Hamra. Hamra is hoping to emulate other Democratic chief executives like Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, who started in the business world and transitioned to state governmental leadership. But he'll have to get past Quaid, who racked up scores of endorsements from elected officials and key Democratic groups. Joining us in studio is Mike Hamra, a candidate for governor and the CEO of Hamra Enterprises, a franchisee of Wendy's, Panera, Caribou Coffee, and Noodles & Company establishments across the country. Mike, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour in St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
So let's start with a listener question from My Reddit Bam on Reddit, appropriately enough. Hamra is a businessman. What in his background makes him a good choice to lead Missouri politically?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. The last 22 years, I've been growing a family-owned business from 26 locations to almost 200 locations today. How I've done that is I've been able to bring people together, establish a common vision, get people aligned on that, and then move things forward, even where there might be disagreements. That's how I've built the organization, and I've built it very effectively by working with people. And as governor, I'll bring that same approach to running the state of Missouri by working with people, even where there might be disagreements, and working with people irrespective of partisan affiliation, as long as it's in the best interest of the state of Missouri.
As I mentioned in the intro, you're running against House Minority Leader Crystal Quaid, who has received almost all of the institutional support from key Democratic elected officials and groups. Bob177 on Reddit asks, why run for governor against such a strong Democratic candidate such as Crystal Quaid? Wouldn't it be more competitive in another primary and more beneficial for the Democratic Party at whole? So I guess the Redditor is asking, why run against Quaid when she's already an established person within the Democratic Party and not some other down ballot contest?
Well, I think, you know, Representative Quaid's going to make her own argument about why she should be, you know, the nominee of the Democratic Party, and I'm going to make my argument. And, you know, the truth is I'm not a career politician. This is my first time that I've run for political office. But I'm running for political office because I'm optimistic about the state of Missouri. Missouri is a great place to live, work, raise a family. But for too long, our politicians have been playing games and trying to score political points. And our state continues to fall further and further behind. In fact, our economy is growing at about half the rate as the rest of the country. We just can't keep putting the same people back in office that got us into this mess to try to get us out of this mess. I bring a different approach to that. I bring new ideas and fresh ideas about how we're going to take things on. That's what I've done for the last 22 years in my own organization. It's why we have one of the lowest turnover rates in the restaurant industry, because of how we've grown the organization, working with people, even where there are disagreements, but also just supporting people and making a difference in their careers and also helping them out in their life. That's why when I go into my stores and I talk to employees, many times they'll tell me, I'm staying here for my career because of how the support I get. That's what I want for all Missourians, and I know I can bring that same approach to Missouri.
Your opponent has received almost all of the endorsement from major labor unions, including two that I belong to, SEIU Local 1 and Communications Workers of America, just for full disclosure. What is your opinion about right to work, which bars unions and employers from requiring workers to pay dues as a condition of employment? Representative Quaid voted against that when it came up in 2017. I'd like to hear your opinion about it.
Well, first off, I'll oppose any right to work legislation as governor in the state of Missouri. Workers deserve a seat at the table to advocate for themselves around fair wages and good benefits. I myself was a former union member when I worked in the federal government. My brother was a member of IBEW for 22 years when he worked at City Utilities down in Springfield, Missouri. I have a lot of respect for what unions do and what they bring to support workers in the workforce, and they're necessary in making sure that people get the type of living they need to support their families. You know, any right to work legislation is going to be something I'm going to absolutely oppose and fight against as governor.
You released a detailed slate of policy proposals, including around the state workforce. One of the ideas is to provide financial incentives for workers that exceed service targets. But there are many state departments, especially after COVID, that are so short-staffed that they're not only not exceeding their goals, but they're not even hitting their basic obligations. So wouldn't this idea be more beneficial to state employees in more fully staffed departments at the expense of ones that are struggling?
Well, this is one of the exciting things for me, the opportunity of being governor. So in my business, I'm in the restaurant industry. We employ over 7,400 people, 2,000 of those people here in the state of Missouri. We have worked and run an organization understaffed over different parts of our life cycle over those 22 years. What we've done to take that on is create environments that create opportunities for people to join the workforce that we support. And we make it attractive for people to want to apply and be an employee in the organization. And then we support those people, both in growing in their careers and then supporting them in their life. It's a very different way of approaching the workforce. It's a different way of approaching it than our government is approaching it today. And I know as governor, I will impact those different organizations throughout the state by creating environments that people want to work in, and also creating opportunities for people to grow in their careers, but also provide the services that people expect in the state of Missouri and that they deserve. People pay taxes, you know, Jason, in the state of Missouri. And when you pay taxes, you expect the types of services that you should be getting for paying those taxes. And I want to make sure that Missourians are getting taken care of and treated fairly through the various services that the state of Missouri provides.
Okay, I'll give a specific example that happened to me that's humorous, but really wasn't humorous for others. So when my daughter was born, the hospital administrators accidentally typed in Adele Bosenbaum on her vital records. Mm-hmm. And it was sent to the Department of Health and Senior Services, and it took 5 months to change her name to Rosenbaum. Now, that was funny because it didn't really affect me, but for somebody else who was in the same situation, they couldn't get health insurance for their kid because their name was wrong. So going back to my other question, how are you going to provide the financial incentives when they exceed targets when you have situations like that where it takes 5 months to change somebody's name because they don't have enough staff to actually do it?
Yeah, so I think it starts with staff. We've got to make sure those departments are staffed and they have the experienced people to run those departments. Secondly, we've got to hold people accountable to do their jobs, and we've got to ensure there's transparency as well. Part of my 42-page policy plan talks about adding in a level of transparency that we don't have today to ensure that people are doing the job they're supposed to be doing. And then managing it through various tracking and accountabilities in looking at the numbers and making sure that those mistakes don't happen for other people. Because that is a good example of how something as simple as that could actually put people in an unfortunate situation like yourself.
Well, let's talk about an even more serious situation, and that's the Children's Division. And I bring this up all the time, but Children's Division has been so short-staffed in places like St. Louis that investigators looking into abuse and neglect of children often had 150 cases on average when they should have had 10 to 12. And the staffing situation has improved, but lawmakers from both parties feel like it won't be sustainable as long as the starting salaries for investigators is around $44,000 a year. If you're governor, would you commit to raising the salaries of the Children's Division?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpeel around that and around the Children's Division. It's going to have to start with, you know, base salaries and compensation and making sure people are getting the benefits they need. Those are table stakes. The other part of it, as I spoke about, is going to be around transparency. And then, you know, the other piece of that is making sure people are held accountable to doing the job they're supposed to do. We can't mess around with children's lives, and we can't mess around with their health care. We've got to be be sure that as a state, we're taking care of children in our state, and this is a safe place to live, and families feel good about that.
So another issue that I followed is this alarming fentanyl report that was produced by the Department of Social Services that said that a number of children in Missouri died of fentanyl overdoses, even though Children's Division investigators found evidence that their parents were taking fentanyl. I understand that you cannot necessarily stop every one of those situations from happening, especially if you have parents that are hiding their fentanyl use really well. But you talk about accountability multiple times. If you were governor and you that came across your desk, what would be the type of accountability measures you would provide to DSS and the Children's Division to make sure that doesn't happen again?
Well, I think I'd have to get, you know, I'd have to understand what's really going on there. You know, I don't make decisions in my own business right now unless I've done my due diligence and fully understand where the areas of opportunity are, and that's something I would do as governor. Like I said, this, you know, having children die of fentanyl is a very serious issue. I hate hearing it. It pains me to even hear that. We would take that on as doing the due diligence, making sure we understand what's really happening down there, and then taking the actions that are necessary to correct it.
We are talking with Mike Hamra. He is a Democratic gubernatorial candidate who will be on the ballot on August 6th. Now, some of your ads on television have focused on your proponency for abortion rights, which could be a major issue in the fall if a measure legalizing abortion makes it to the ballot. Republicans have vowed to put something else up for a vote if it passes. If you were governor, what would you do to preserve the ballot item that will be on the line in November?
Well, you know, we're going to have a ballot initiative thanks to advocates across the state for making sure that we're going to have that as a ballot initiative and providing voters in the state of Missouri the opportunity to restore women's right to abortion. And I'm confident that that's going to pass. I'll be a governor that's going to defend those rights and ensure that we protect women's rights to abortion going forward. There's no question that there will be a fight on our hands. It's why it's so important to have a Democrat governor going forward so they can make sure that that right is protected over the long term for women in the state of Missouri.
There have been some Missouri Republicans who contend that voters have already spoken on this issue by electing GOP legislators and statewide officials who make their opposition to abortion a key part of their candidacy. What makes you so confident that voters will approve the abortion legalization measure in November when they also elect Republicans who are virulently opposed to abortion all the time?
Yeah, I think we've seen some pretty strong polling on this already in the state of Missouri that has shown that the majority of Missourians do not approve of the extreme abortion ban that we have in the state, and they're against it, and they want to see something done. They don't want politicians in their doctor's offices making those decisions for them or in their families. They want them out of those doctor's offices. And I'm very confident that the will of the people will prevail in this situation in November and will overturn the extreme abortion ban we have in the state of Missouri.
Democrats, especially in the Missouri General Assembly, have been critical of tax cuts for businesses and individuals, contending their misplaced priorities for the rich at the expense of the state's future fiscal stability. So one of the problems, though, is undoing a lot of those requires like a vote of the people. You can't just pass a bill undoing most tax cuts. Would you be in favor of asking voters to increase taxes in certain instances, especially if you're governor, there's a budgetary shortfall and you need to get more revenue for some reason?
Well, look, the reason I released a 42-page plan was to talk about how we're going to generate revenue for the state of Missouri. A major component of that plan is to increase the economy, like stimulate the economy in the state of Missouri, both by providing incentives for innovators and people that are ambitious to start their own businesses, as well as supporting existing businesses in the state of Missouri. Right now, 3 out of 4 businesses in the state of Missouri employ 10 or fewer people in the state, and it represents 55% plus of the GDP in the state of Missouri. There is nothing more effective that we can take on than supporting and sustaining businesses, as well as helping people start businesses in the state of Missouri, as well as making sure people that want good, qualified, and high-skilled jobs will get those jobs.
So based off that answer, I didn't get a sense that you would be supportive of raising taxes for any reason. Is that a fair assumption?
I think as governor, I'm going to look at all this, but at the end of the day, there are a lot of alternatives to take on in the state. One of the things, as I said, we're growing at half the rate as the rest of the economy. We're not focused on growing the economy. We could simply start by helping and ensure that we can grow this economy by supporting people that want to start businesses, as well as people that want to have high-skilled jobs in the state.
Let's talk about another issue you may have to deal with if you're governor: incentives to keep the Kansas City Chiefs and the Kansas City Royals in Missouri. If you were governor, would you support providing any state funds or incentives to keep the teams in Missouri and prevent them from going to Kansas?
Look, in my business, anytime we've had big issues, I've brought all the stakeholders together to sit down, understand what's going to work and what's not going to work. I wish I was governor today so I could start having these conversations. And I would bring all the stakeholders together, as well as the owners of the Chiefs, even the Royals, and even possibly the Cardinals, if that becomes a big issue for us, to sit down and really understand what's going to work and what's not going to work, and making sure that it's going to support the people in the state of Missouri. We've got, you know, there's clearly an economic upside to having the Chiefs and the Royals and the Cardinals all stay here in the state of Missouri, as well as having great teams that people can be, you know, fans of. I'm a huge fan of all three of those teams. I want to see them stay in the state of Missouri, and as governor, I would do everything I can to make sure they stay here as long as it's in the benefit and the support of the people in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, I'm kind of agnostic on all three of those teams. I'm a Chicago Bears fan. I'm a Chicago White Sox fan, and we don't have an NBA team. I'm a Milwaukee Bucks fan. But as a St. Louisan, I heard all the time when St. Louis officials were trying to keep the Rams here from Kansas City lawmakers, what's in it for us? Why should we spend state funds to keep the Rams here when none of that's going to help Kansas City? So I'm turning this around. Why should anybody in St. Louis pay their state tax dollars to prevent two stadiums from moving 10 miles across a border when they're still going to be in the Kansas City area, even if they're in another state?
Yeah, I think there's an economic argument around this that helps stimulate the economy both in Kansas City and even around the state. I think there's a strong argument about that. And it also helps increase people's excitement about what's happening in the state of Missouri. We want to create incentives for people to move into the state of Missouri. Having sports teams helps that. And there's other economic benefits to it. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to sitting down and making sure that we're not giving out millions of dollars just to help billionaires make more money. It's about making sure that people in the state of Missouri can have the team, but it also benefits them from an economic standpoint.
At least two Republican gubernatorial candidates, Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft and Senator Bill Eigel, have backed getting rid of a gas tax that the legislature and the governor enacted earlier in the decade. What are your thoughts on getting rid of that tax?
Well, look, we've got to have revenue in the state to support so many things that we're not getting supported in the state right now. Our public school systems are not getting the proper support. You know, we did a de minimis kind of salary increase for teachers in our public school system. I don't think it's going to move the needle much in helping attract more people into our school system to become teachers. And it's going to certainly not necessarily help the existing teachers make it easier on them. We've got to do everything we can to support our public education, as well as helping our healthcare industry in the state of Missouri. You know, we're right now on the cusp of seeing some of the healthcare organizations leave parts of the rural areas of the state. We've got to stop that. We've got to have the revenue to support those different, whether it's healthcare or whether it's public school systems. So for me, I'm looking, and I'll have to look at this as governor, but we'll have to understand all the things that we can do to support our local communities, as well as public schools and healthcare throughout the state.
During Governor Mike Parson's administration, there was the establishment of these tuition tax credits that allowed for scholarships for public and private schools. Mm-hmm. Would you have signed that if you had been governor, or is that something that kind of runs counter to your beliefs about education?
Well, first off, if I was governor, that piece of legislation would have never come to my desk. You know, giving teachers an increase in their salary, but at the same time, you know, peeling away funds that are going to go to public schools out to vouchers so that people can send their kids to private schools. That doesn't work. We've got to be able to focus on supporting our public school system. You know, here in the state of Missouri, we have 6.1 million people, almost 800,000 kids from preschool all the way through 12th grade are in our, you know, in our school systems. And we've got to focus on supporting our children in public school systems. They are the future of the state, and they are the future leaders of our state. What they did was take away the opportunity to support those 800,000 kids in our school systems.
I got to ask one more political question before I let you go, because I imagine that this could be part of the general election campaign if you win the primary. Feeling Carry 6446 on Reddit asks, according to the Missouri Constitution, Article 4, Section 3, the governor must have been a resident of Missouri for 10 years. Can Hammer approve residency for the last 10 years? And this isn't a reference to news reports that you voted in Illinois in 2020. Let's just lay it out there. What is the deal with your residency? And let's just get this question out in the open.
Sure, yeah. No, I'm qualified to run for governor in the state of Missouri. I was born and raised here. I live here with my wife and children. I went to the University of Missouri School of Law. I've been running a family-owned business for the last 22 years here. I've built many locations in about 50 different communities throughout the state here. It's kind of ludicrous, but I'm absolutely qualified. I wouldn't be putting my family through this if I wasn't qualified to run for governor.
Mike Hammer is a Democratic gubernatorial candidate. You can listen to House Minority Leader Crystal Quaid's interview on the Politically Speaking Hour by going to stlpr.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we're pleased to welcome Sarah Kellogg, who covers state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio. Sarah, welcome. And we're almost at the finish line.
We're so close, Jason. It's good to be back.
What were your impressions of Hammer's interview?
You know, it was really interesting for me to hear Hammer really talk about his business acumen and how that qualifies him to be the governor of the state. You hear a lot of times, really from Republicans, a lot about how they want to run the government like a business. I don't think you really hear that a lot from Democrats on that angle. So I think that that was a big part of his interview. But ultimately, I don't know if it really strayed too far from citing his business experience as to why. You know, there weren't a lot of details on some of the questions you asked about, like plans and like how he would do this, other than saying like, well, this is the foundation I've built up with my business, and this is how it would translate to the state. I don't know if it went really beyond that.
When House Minority Leader Crystal Quaid announced her gubernatorial bid last year, many of us, being bigwig political reporters, felt she was the odds-on favorite to move on to the general election. Has Hammer's campaign changed that assumption at all?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it definitely is harder than it was with him in the race. And I think that the amount of money that he's brought into it, you see a lot of, you know, when I'm in St. Louis, I stay with my parents and I see a lot of his ads on the television. And so I think it definitely has influenced some, but I'm not sure by how much.
So the reason why you see him on television, he's poured a lot of his own money into the contest. And it brings up another self-funder, Trudy Bush Valentine in 2022, who beat Lucas Kuntz for the Democratic nomination for Senate. But like, there's a big difference between those two candidates. Bush Valentine mercilessly attacked Kuntz. I don't think I've seen a single negative ad against Quaid. And do you think that self-funding strategy will be effective, since they're all sort of generic positive ads?
You know, I think that attacking Quaid would have backfired first. I don't think that would have been an effective strategy really at all, like, especially when you're trying to like elevate yourself as you're looking at like a man versus a woman in a campaign. I just don't think it would have benefited to be really nasty. And I think that with the self-funding strategy, it doesn't hurt to have more money. But also, I think the angle there is putting your own money into the race could show that maybe not as many people are willing to donate. And if you look at even just campaign finance data, it's not that Hammer doesn't have people donating. He does. But Quaid has just so many more.
So we're going to talk later in the show about some really contentious races. Mm-hmm. And the contest between Hammer and Quaid has been pretty civil overall. Yeah. But I have heard from some Missouri Democrats, and primarily female Missouri Democrats, who will be very angry if Hammer wins. They point to the fact that Quaid received endorsements from organized labor groups, but they're not giving her the same amount of money that they're giving to male candidates. Do you think there could be some internal tumult within the Missouri Democratic Party if Hammer wins?
I'm not sure, because Hammer really isn't a part of kind of the legislative block that I think that Quaid is getting that support from. So I think it is kind of an us versus them mentality, in that if there's fractures, it's not really within the party itself, but it's just kind of in these two groups. So I don't know how much that's going to impact after the primary.
And one of the issues Hammer could have is if he wins the primary, there's a Republican candidate, Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe, with significant business experience. I say this all the time, but when I went to Mizzou, I had the Mid-Missouri loves a Mike Kehoe deal imprinted into my subconscious. I can still sing it, even though I haven't been in college in 20 years. Is it going to be hard for him to stand out if Kehoe wins this primary?
I think if that's the main thing he's running on, that would be difficult for stand out. If they both can point to their business acumen, I think that that doesn't, you know, that doesn't distinguish either one of them then. And then Kehoe has the experience of being lieutenant governor, so he has a political edge there.
Democrats have not won a statewide election since 2018, and their ability to piece together the vaunted rural, urban, and suburban coalition could face challenges if, let's just say, Donald Trump wins the state by 15 or 18 points. What do you think it will take for either Hammer or Quaid to break through in this increasingly red Missouri?
I think that it will be kind of taking advantage of the momentum that there would be there. Like, if Trump, you know, were to win Missouri, that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be maybe greater turnout among Democrats, because Harris would be on the ballot, and that would translate down. And also, it's not, you know, guaranteed to be on the ballot yet, but it's very likely that the amendment legalizing abortion, I feel like I talk about this every time I'm on the show, but the amendment legalizing abortion is a huge motivator, I feel like, for some people. So that could be enough to give them the boost that they need.
Sarah Kellogg covers state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.